Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, imagine a community that combines eco-friendly homes that actively contribute to residents' health and well-being. That's the aim of the Catskill Project, and it's under construction right now in Livingston Manor. Reporter Maren Scotton speaks to one of the founders of the Catskill Project about his vision for sustainable and environmentally friendly living. Plus, the Healthiest Fire Department Challenge update. Lindsay Wheat is here from Sullivan 180. And a Wild West burlesque coming to Narrowsburg, described as a rootin' tootin' burlesque show featuring aerial acrobatics, live singers, dance, and drag. We'll learn more. Plus, Colombian guitarist Carlos Bedoya performing at Kindred Spirits in Milford. Classical Kit speaks to him later. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Hamas says it won't participate in ceasefire talks that are set to take place tomorrow in either Qatar or Egypt. President Biden has called on all parties to restart negotiations after the killing of Hamas's leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran. It is presumed to have been carried out by Israel. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi has more.
A senior Hamas spokesman said today that the group wants Israel to commit to a ceasefire proposal discussed last month, and that was based on President Biden's vision. Suhail al-Hindi told NPR that if Israel commits, Hamas would be prepared to start discussing how to implement the deal. He said Hamas will not be part of a new round of talks tomorrow. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has blamed Hamas for obstructing negotiations. The New York Times reported Tuesday that documents show that Netanyahu has been inflexible in recent talks, adding new conditions to his demands. Netanyahu has denied the report. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported a further easing of inflation. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 30 points in early trading.
The annual inflation rate dropped to 2.9% last month. That's the lowest it's been in more than 3 years. Housing inflation remains stubbornly high, but most other elements of the cost of living index have stabilized. Grocery prices rose a little more than 1% over the last 12 months, while gasoline prices were down. So-called core inflation, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, was 3.2% in July. That's down from the previous month. That likely clears the way for the Federal Reserve to start lowering interest rates at its next meeting in September. Average wages in July were up 3.6%. Wage gains have been outpacing price increases for well over a year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The New York judge who oversaw the hush money trial last spring against former President Donald Trump has again refused to step aside from the case. This is the third time Trump's lawyers have asked this of Judge Juan Merchan. Trump was convicted of 34 counts of falsifying business records. Trump claims Merchan is biased because of Merchan's daughter's political work. A New York State ethics panel said last year Merchan could remain on the case. The center of Tropical Storm Ernesto is just off the east coast of Puerto Rico. Its top sustained winds are at 70 miles per hour, just below hurricane strength. National Hurricane Center meteorologist Robbie Berg says the island is getting significant rain.
When all is said and done for Puerto Rico, we're expecting about 6 to 8 inches. Maybe some like local areas could have up to 10 inches. And of course, Puerto Rico is mountainous, so you dump that much rain on the island like that, and they end up getting a pretty severe flash flooding incidents.
Forecasters say Ernesto may move toward Bermuda later this week. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. A new study looks at CEO pay at not-for-profit hospitals in the U.S. As Sarah Bowden reports, the average salary for the executives tops $1 million a year.
Nearly half of hospitals in the U.S. are tax-exempt because they provide medical care to their communities, and between 2012 and 2019, their CEO salaries rose by 30%, according to a new study from Rice University. Senior author Vivian Ho says that the study found that the higher a hospital's profit, the more that CEO earned. But there's no connection to the nonprofit's mission. Previous research has shown that bigger hospital profits don't translate to more charity care for low-income patients.
I don't think the incentives are set up correctly for them to think about the well-being of the entire community.
The American Hospital Association told NPR that CEO pay is increasing across all economic sectors, and that puts pressure on health systems to do the same. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Bowden.
The National Interagency Fire Center says there are 77 large fires now burning in the U.S. Oregon has the most, with 17. The largest blaze actively burning in the U.S. is the Park Fire in California. That's north of Sacramento. That wildfire has scorched more than 671 square miles, and it's 40% contained. In Greece, wildfires that broke out last weekend have killed one person near Athens. Firefighters say they're working to contain it. They're getting help from improving weather. Thousands of people around Athens had to flee as the fire burned so rapidly toward them they had trouble escaping. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their travel card, Venture. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Catskills Project is a 90-acre carbon-neutral community in the Catskills made up of 25 homes designed to be sustainable and environmentally friendly. The project was founded by Greg Hale and Peter Malik, who both previously worked for the National Resource Defense Council and wanted to bring eco-friendly, carbon-neutral living to the East Coast. Three of the 25 lots are currently occupied, and reporter Maren Scotton spoke to Hale about his vision for a sustainable, creative, and connected community.
So, Greg, what actually is the Catskills Project, and how would you describe it?
I would say that it's intended to be a 25-house single-family residential development. Right now, we have 11 lots on the market. We have an additional 14 that will come in the future. We haven't added those. There's regulatory approvals we'll need to get to bring those in, but they're already subdivided, so it's part of the project. So 25-house single-family residential development that is focused on high-performance building. So all of our houses are built to passive house standards. It's all electric. So we don't, our homeowners association documents don't allow fossil fuel combustion to heat your houses or heat your hot water, or cook your food, dry your clothes. So it's all electric. And then the third leg of carbon neutrality is making sure that your power is clean, which if you just get it from the grid today, it's not clean yet. You know, New York State has ambitions to have their grid 100% clean by 2040, but that's a ways off. So we get that clean energy from solar PV that's on your rooftop, or you can just subscribe to a community solar provider, which is essentially just checking a box and getting your energy from a community solar farm that's then delivered through the grid. And it's generally less expensive than straightforward NYSEG utility rates. This project is really kind of the fruition of it's really a vision, a dream of mine for quite some time.
Yeah.
It's really about doing and showing people that it can be done what I'd been out, you know, telling people all around New York State and the country and in conferences and presentations we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're showing how you can develop new properties as a carbon neutral in a community sense versus just there are plenty of net zero buildings.
Yeah.
Not enough of them. We need a ton more. But at least in the Northeast, we aren't aware of any other community-wide attempt that's, you know, really focused on being operationally carbon neutral and also paying attention to the emissions that are embedded in the materials that we use.
Other than the sustainability aspects, are there other like elements of community involved for people living there? Like, I'm curious how do they all, will they all interact with each other, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. It's hard to construct community, but it seems to be working well so far. We do have some community features, in particular, a trail system.
Oh, cool.
So, today, it's 1.5 miles. It's You know, we only have our first phase open, but then it will expand to the second and third phase, which are contiguous, but served by different entry roads. So the trail system, which goes past really spectacular waterfalls and streams and meadows, and it's a beautiful trail. That's sort of the connective tissue. And we have a community pond where we'll have some picnic tables and people can get together. We want to integrate the arts into our community. So that we have ideas. So far, we have three people living here. I actually bought one of the houses, so I live here.
Oh, awesome.
I live and breathe the project. It was exciting the other day. One of them buzzed me and said, "Hey, I need to borrow a cup of milk." And, you know, that's sort of a simple thing, but it's like, hey, we're starting to have a community here.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to tie it together. We have an HOA, we have meetings, we have landscaping. So we see our neighbors, and our intention is to, we have two more houses under contract that we're building, and we think those people will bring a great spirit to the community as well. I think one thing that's really cool is that our four buyers and me, the fifth, I guess, all just really, when they got here, they felt like this was the right place for them. And, you know, assuming we can keep that sensibility, I think that we can build a community where, you know, people just share some values and ideas and want to get together with their neighbors and interact. You know, that's the goal.
What has, like, the reception and interest level been like? Like, I know you've got a couple people moved in, but has there been a general level of interest?
Well, there's definitely interest in the area. Our buyers are usually people that are coming from the city, or, you know, New York City or northern New Jersey, somewhere in the New York metropolitan area. We do a lot of open houses, some of which are, and there's two a year that are sponsored by, it's called the International Passive House Open Days. So on those weekends, one in the spring and one in the fall, they have a whole bunch of passive house buildings that have been constructed across the country that open up for tours. So on those days, I'd say 3/4 or more of the people who show up are interested in the design and how we accomplished it. And they've got a piece of property over here or thinking of doing something similar over there and want to know how we did it. And, you know, like I said earlier, that's part of our mission is to share. So it's great to see that interest. And, you know, maybe it's because they're here and we're here, but there's generally been a really positive reception to our, you know, the architecture of our house, but the concept of our property as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think local people are trying to get their arms around it. Carbon neutral buildings is kind of an alien topic to you know, this region of the world, but as we explain it, it seems to resonate with a lot of people, not everybody. But the encouraging thing is a few of the contractors that we have finally landed on, as it takes a while to get the right team to be building things. But the contractors that we're using now, from excavators to carpenters, all sorts of other trades, see the opportunity to learn how to build passive houses. And are very interested in figuring out how to do that because they buy into the idea that this is the way that the state is going and that the country needs to go.
And you've touched on this a little bit. When you look 10 years down the line, what's the ideal vision for the Catskills project and what does it look like?
Well, I would hope we would have sold our 25 houses. I'll still live here. Yeah, I hope that it's a thriving community. I hope that we have both full-time residents as well as part-time residents. Mm-hmm. So far, we have one of our buyers is looking to transition to full-time, mm-hmm. you know, but they're here more like 4 days a week versus, you know, 2 on the weekend. So, and they're looking to transition to make this their full-time. And then one of our buyers is a young couple where she can work remotely. They currently have a cabin in Roscoe. They're looking to upgrade their experience here, and they would be closer to full-time residents. So the more, you know, we want communities like you were just talking about. So I would hope we're finished with this project. We're looking at ways to take our carbon neutral mission elsewhere. I don't know if it's more houses in the Catskill project. You know, I've got some very nascent ideas about getting more involved in the artistic community. Like mm-hmm. I mentioned to you, we have some other lots that aren't part of the lots that will be part of this project, but are located nearby, or we'd like to really lean in on the artistic side and see if we can't develop something there, you know, maybe with a partner like Cass or somebody like that. We're not thinking that 25 houses is going to make a big dent in the whole climate picture. However, we're also about opening up everything about what we're doing, the model that we're doing, and trying to promote it out in the world and show developers that you actually can do it this way. Mm-hmm. And you can do it and make a reasonable profit at it at the same time.
That was Greg Hale, the co-founder of the Catskills Project, a carbon neutral community. In Liberty, I'm Maren Scotton for Radio Catskill.
Thanks to Maren for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Sullivan 180, the organization dedicated to building a healthy community through people, places, and policy. Lindsay Weed is here to tell us about International Overdose Awareness Day and an update on the Healthiest Fire Department Challenge. That's next. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. International Overdose Awareness Day is the world's largest annual campaign to end overdose, remember without stigma those who have died, and acknowledge the grief of family and friends left behind. There is a local commemoration of International Overdose Awareness Day coming up on August 29th. And here to tell us more is Lindsay Wheat from Sullivan 180. Lindsay, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
We were just talking about this in the break, that this is a very moving ceremony. Can you tell folks a little bit about what happens at the event?
Absolutely. So this is the fourth annual International Overdose Awareness Day here in Sullivan County, which unfortunately is very necessary here as we are leading per capita more than any other county in New York State. So it's a platform for so many things this evening. It's a platform to come together and really mourn those that we have lost to overdose. It's an evening for education, as we'll have both local and state leaders to speak about what they are doing for us here in the county. And it's an evening to celebrate those that are in recovery, and also to see all the organizations that we have here in Sullivan County fighting against this crisis. We have 23 tabling organizations that will be there.
And, it, you know, again, to talk about how it is a way for acknowledging that grief of family members and friends left behind. Folks have a chance to talk and to share their stories as well.
Yes, of course. You know, it's an interesting space that many don't understand. And there's a stigma, with overdose that it's, just someone off the street. And it's absolutely not. It was someone's brother, son, daughter, parent, best friend. And it's really a space for everyone to come together and mourn a loss in this way.
And this is a part of, again, as we said, International Overdose Awareness Day. This one being held on Thursday, the 29th, at the courthouse, due to the Labor Day weekend. That's going to be at 6 in Monticello. And it really is you're here to speak about it, but it's really brought to folks here in the area by the community of people who have worked together to end the opioid epidemic in Sullivan County. We're not there yet. We're making some progress, though. Talk a little bit about the community stakeholders and how you guys are coming together.
Sure. So if I could say anything about Sullivan County, it is that we are resilient. And there are men and women that wake up every day to take some sort of fight towards this crisis. So as I said, in just one evening, we'll have 23 organizations that every day deal with either treatments, hope, prevention, recovery. So it's really incredible to see how many people right here in our county are working together to end this crisis.
Yeah, it's nice to know that they're not people in silos trying to do your own individual mission necessarily. Sullivan 180 definitely dedicated to turning around those health rankings and helping with prevention, but working together hand in hand with all of the stakeholders in the area.
Yeah, so Sullivan 180 really stepped up to lead the event. However, this is absolutely a community event. We're very lucky to so many people that support this important evening. The county takes such a big part in this and letting us use the front lawn of the Sullivan County Courthouse. We have an incredible committee that every year comes together to make sure that this night is everything that it needs to be for those that attend.
And, local first responders will be there, local law enforcement, government officials, but also music and dance artists as well.
Yes, we're so lucky to really pull in local youth this year. And so this year we have the Nesson Cultural Arts Performing Center that will be there this year, providing us with some beautiful and gentle music for this evening. We have bagpipers. We're going to have a proper color guard. We have first responders and Monticello Fire Department with their ladder truck to hang our flag. It really is a full community evening.
And again, that's Thursday from 6 to 8 at the Sullivan County Courthouse lawn in Monticello. And folks can just show up. They don't need to register or anything, but they can get more information by contacting you or Sullivan 180.
Yes, of course. But this is an open event to our community, and we really encourage bringing family and friends and youth for this educational and really beautiful evening.
Another thing we want to talk about is something we always enjoy mentioning is the Sullivan 180, a healthiest fire department challenge that's focusing on the health and well-being of those first responders, specifically county firefighters. You've got 20 fire departments in the county who've accepted this challenge, and they're in contention to be named 2024's healthiest fire department. Can you give us a little update on how it's going?
Yeah, sure. So last year, when we introduced this, it was we were just happy that they accepted, right? But this, but now this year, I think they have exceeded all expectations and even surprised themselves, as we have now more than doubled the healthier activities that they've incorporated into their departments and their lifestyles. So really just taking on challenges to have healthier meals, doing yoga, getting together as a department and taking walks and watching videos on mental health.
Yeah. And you guys sent out an update earlier this morning, actually, because it's coming to a close. The Healthiest Fire Department Challenge, the winner will be unveiled, I guess, what, September 7th?
Yes, at the Sullivan County Volunteer Firemen's Parade. And if you have never been to one, it's such an awesome time, and a really great way to say thank you and support your local first responders and find out after 8 long months of these departments competing against each other who our winners are.
And that's September 7th, the Sullivan County Volunteer Firefighters Parade in Livingston Manor. You'll get to see who's crowned the 2024 Healthiest Fire Department. But I wanted to just go over a few of these stats. They have completed 2,348 healthy activities, which were some of those things you talked about, 526 healthy meal replacements. 45 people have been trained in QPR suicide prevention. 80 people have been trained in Narcan administration, which is all a part of this. And 191 health-focused webinars and podcasts, even moving it into the digital age.
Yes, which was a little difficult for some, but all have been doing such an incredible job and really dedicating to themselves and taking it back to their families, just healthier options.
And again, Sullivan 180 participating and encouraging folks to participate in International Overdose Awareness Day. That's Thursday, August 29th at 6 at the Sullivan County Courthouse. And then coming up on the 7th of September, that Volunteer Firefighters Parade in Livingston Manor. See who's crowned the 2024 Healthiest Fire Department. And you can get more information about all of the events and activities that Sullivan 180 is doing to build a healthy community one degree at a time at sullivan180.org. Lindsay Wheat, thank you. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, a Wild West burlesque coming to Narrowsburg. We'll find out more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the next Radio Lab, we honor groundbreaking radio performer and writer Joe Frank.
When you hug people goodbye after a social event, there is always that moment when they squeeze you more forcefully than before, a polite way of letting you know they are about to withdraw. Usually, the one who disengages first is the one who cares less.
This guy is doing a thing. This is it.
They're like demented talk of the town.
That's on the next Radio Lab this afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, it's Mimi, inviting you to Radio Catskill's free planned giving event, Your Sound Legacy. Tomorrow, 4 to 6:30 at Piccolo Paese at the Sullivan County Golf Club Liberty. We'll have complimentary wine, hors d'oeuvres, and local estate planning professionals, Rourke Law, Coombe Bender & Company, and the Community Foundation of Orange & Sullivan. RSVP to Mimi at WJFFradio.org for Your Sound Legacy, a free planned giving event, presented in partnership with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance and Growing Older Together.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wild West Burlesque coming to Narrowsburg. It's described as a rootin' tootin' burlesque show featuring aerial acrobatics, live singers, dance, and drag. Here to tell us more is Susan Mendoza, who co-produced and co-wrote this performance with Miss Emma and Pixel, the drag jester. Pixel is here, too. And also, we've got Miss Veronica. This is a whole crew here, everybody. I got all the mics on. Hi, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Susan, now tell us a little bit about this. We know you from, well, we know you from your voiceover work than the you do for Radio Chatskill and Radio Catskill here. And we also know you from the Chi Hive. How do we know you from the Wild West Burlesque? How did this all come about?
Okay. Well, that's a really, I'll take you way back to my childhood.
Oh,
Tim.
Wow. That is an interesting childhood, and we may need to devote more time to this subject.
Listen to me. This is such a dreamy, dreamy project. And it's been something that's been percolating for some time now. I think most importantly, it's the foundation of what brought us all together. And that is each in our own way. You know, we've all come to the performing arts to help us process life, to be able to find freedom of expression, to be able to connect with like-minded people, and to even become a source of, inspiration for those who aren't able to really fully access themselves in these deeper expressive ways. And so, you know, Tim, you know, at the Chi Hive, like, we offer so many things, and we have a beautiful aerial arts program, and we, you know, have a wonderful yoga program. And so, you know, Veronica teaches at the Chi Hive, and so do some of the other performers, the aerialists, and we all just decided that it was time to put a show together, to like really take time to show the community what it's about to embody your practice, to be able to trust yourself and to have the courage to get up and perform in front of other people. So,
and you know, burlesque, as we say it today, has this connotation of something naughty or sassy, but it has its roots in mockery, satire, joke. It's meant to be like a literary or dramatic musical work intended to cause laughter by caricaturing a manner or spirit of serious works. I didn't memorize that. I read it off the internet. But that it's, you know, there is this, there's this art form here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Explain a little bit about that, if you can, if one of you want to take the
You know what,
the
baton I'd like to throw that over to Pixel.
Pixel.
Yeah.
Yes. Hi.
Hello. So yeah, I mean, I think like burlesque is kind of like rooted in camp, you know, back in the day, like in, you know, when you were stripping off your clothes, you couldn't be like overtly sexual. So it was very like tongue in cheek and playful and flirty. Yeah. And so we're bringing that like fun, flirty nature to Narrowsburg, to Beach
Lake. Comedy and lots of comedy. We are not taking ourselves seriously.
And like the show has like variety in it. We've got aerial acrobatics. We have aerial silk, some rope. And we have, some characters in there too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's this Friday and Saturday at the Darby Barn in Narrowsburg there, across the bridge from Narrowsburg at the Darby. So tell me a little bit about, you guys co-writing this, Pixel and Susan along with, Miss Emma.
Yes.
How long was this gestating for you as an idea? And then how did it kind of come together for you?
Well, I think the idea was gestating for a while for Susan. But I think about like 3 months, it took us 2 to 3 months. It took us to write and
much less than that.
I don't know. It was a while.
Yeah. Well, it's been a few weeks. Yeah. But you know, when I finally got one of our other headliners on board with us, Miss Emma, and thank you to Josiah Early from the Kashrekton and Fire Station for hooking us up. But, when I pulled, her in on the project, we three sat down and, I started with, you know, wouldn't it be fun if we created this vibe around, you know, this town ain't big enough for the two of us kind of thing. Just the kind of fun stuff that happens in little towns and little communities, especially along the Delaware.
So is that
River.
The theme of the plot that you've got yes. going on? Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Go ahead, Susan.
You gotta give folks a tease here. It's burlesque. Give them a tease.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of banter, some competition, some fierce and funny competition between our headlining acts.
We are in a small town.
Yeah.
And there is lots of competition out in the small towns. And we wanted to play on the spirit of that and make it like fun and accessible.
And flirty.
And flirty.
Now, Miss Veronica, you've been quite silent during this whole exchange so far. How have you gotten roped into this?
Yeah, so...
Move a little closer to the mic there, yes.
So I teach yoga over at the She Hive with Susan. And one day after class, she was just like, I just want to do something fun. And I kind of just saw the idea like bubble up in her. And I've kind of got to see the whole thing unfold and come together. And I'm not much of a burlesque person myself. I've never done anything like this, but I'm a singer and I'm a songwriter. And having that kind of stage presence, I think, is going to kind of translate into this with my already flirty personality. So it's giving me a platform to try something new in a really small town where I would not have gone to do anything like this unless I was to go to like the city, you know? So mm-hmm. having this at home with people I already know is really awesome.
There's a comfort level.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you kind of, as you've rehearsed or talked this through, are you kind of feeling more comfortable in your skin about it?
Oh yeah. Give me a little drink and I'll be fine.
You know, a little whiskey.
Yeah.
Veronica brings up a really good point though, like around, like this is her first time really bringing together, integrating like song and trying burlesque out for the first time. And to be honest, we have a few first timers who are really, you know, brave to get up and put their act together and want to share it with the public. So that's even more exciting. And the fact that we actually all won't be in the same place together, you know, in the barn until Friday morning when we actually do our run throughs. Yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing.
Now, we mentioned that, again, it's the terminology of burlesque these days is associated with, you know, something a little sassy saucy. Is it family friendly or is there a little sassy saucy component to it that we should be aware of?
And not family friendly. I guess it depends on the family, you know.
Well, your family, as you discussed your childhood, is there
like
the
a
beginning.
PG-16? Like, let's say that. PG-16.
For, you know, for sure.
For teens and older.
Mostly 21 and over,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Are you hoping to make this a regular thing?
Absolutely. There's a lot brewing in the background that I'm trying to make come to fruition, or I'm wishing will come to fruition with some other people in our community. So that's TBD. In the meantime, I did want to take a minute. Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about the artwork. It's really, really bold. What do you call this? Like saturated, blown out color here. That's you, Susan. Is this your character? Do you have a character name?
That's my character.
What's your character name?
Sass E. Frass.
I see what you did there. and then this is this Miss Emma here? And she's got this kind of purple background with Miss a rootin' tootin' gun and a hat.
Yeah, you know, I want to just shine a light on the extraordinary talent that exists in our communities, you know, up here in Sullivan County. And specifically for this show, a young, incredible photographer, Danny Case, Danny Case Photography, she took the time to shoot all those photographs. She'll also be at the show documenting. And then George Colombo, who is an incredible artist, and y'all need to follow him. He's big time. He graciously gave his time and energy to create the graphic designs for that.
So, yeah, they're very striking, so you can't miss those around the area. So remind folks where they can get more information about the event coming up this Friday and Saturday.
So ultimately, I would love for folks who are on Instagram to head on over to @FlirtyRiotNY, and you'll get all the details about the shows and the characters and all that jazz. We are, you know, you could sign up through the Chi Hive, through the Mind Body, or Venmo. Venmo is probably the easiest way to go, and that would be Venmo @TheChiHive with the night that you want to come, how many people, and your name, that kind of thing.
Pixel, do you want to leave us with anything before we go? Any other final closing thoughts?
It is going to be an amazing time. You should absolutely come, and it's going to be really fierce and fun.
Pixel, the drag jester, Miss Veronica, and Sass E. Frass, otherwise known as Susan Mendoza, presenting the Wild West Burlesque coming to Narrowsburg, the Darby Barn, this Friday and Saturday. Thank you guys for joining us and enlivening our morning a little bit.
Thank you for having us.
Did you know that burlesque, beginning in the early 18th century, the term burlesque was used throughout Europe to describe musical works in which serious and comic elements were juxtaposed? And it's still used in music to indicate a bright or high-spirited mood, sometimes in contrast to seriousness. Mm. Again, my friends at the interweb told me that, and I'm bringing it up because we're coming back with a classical kit and an upcoming classical performance at Kindred Spirits this weekend after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, you'll hear the new exotic sounds of the Tiki Delights and Ixtahuela, plus one of Henry Mancini's first solo film scores for the film noir thriller Touch of Evil. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join us where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour, coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Join Radio Catskills Community Advisory Board for Horizon Happy Hour, 5 p.m. today at the Market Sheds at Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. Share your feedback about Radio Catskill and hear music from Juma Sultan's Aboriginal Music Society with Laszlo Lang, son of Woodstock co-creator Michael Lang. Radio Catskills Community Advisory Board provides input on how well the station is meeting the needs of the community. So tell us how we're doing and enjoy some great jams for free. Horizon Happy Hour, 5 p.m. today at Bethel Woods.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Classical Kit is here to tell us about an upcoming performance at Kindred Spirits in Milford this weekend. It's with Carlos Bedoya, the classical guitarist. Good morning, Kit.
Good morning.
And we're having a little trouble getting Carlos on the line, but we'll do that. In the meantime, should we tell us a little bit about Carlos and we can play a little bit of his music?
Yeah. Maybe you could pull up Largo, that Bach.
Largo, perfect. I'll get that out. Yeah.
So Carlos is, you know, he's really talented. He's a classical guitarist. He's currently working on his doctorate out in Indiana, but he's also been a choral director. He sings, he arranges, he composes, he teaches a lot. Both master classes and in courses at the universities where he got his master's and where he's now working on his doctorate. So he's, you know, done all kinds of things. And he has just a wonderful tone to his music. In the background, you're hearing a recording of his doing the Largo from a transcription of a Bach violin concerto. So he's great. And
we got him. Hey, Carlos,
and
good morning.
He's on the phone now.
Good morning.
We found you. Good. Hey, how are you?
Good morning, Carlos. Sorry it took us a little bit to get you there.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize I'm talking to more than one people, so I was confused, but now I'm good. How are you guys?
Okay, good. Very good. So I was just telling our audience about the fact that you, besides playing classical guitar, you also do arranging and some composing and some conducting of choral groups and lots of teaching. But I'd love to know about your musical background, how you got started.
Sure. So first of all, it's a pleasure to be talking to you guys this morning. Mm-hmm. So about my background, I was born in Colombia and an interest.
All right. Well, we seem to have lost him there. We'll get him back in a second. Go ahead.
You.
We'll go get some more of his music. We're going to go back to some of the Largo in the background. If you want to tell folks a little bit more about Carlos.
Yeah. So, well, let me talk a little bit about what's bringing him here. He's going to be up at Kindred Spirits down at Kindred Spirits Arts in Milford. At Gray Towers, which is the National Historic Site down there that hosts some of Kindred Spirits Arts programs, he's going to be giving a concert along with cellist Josef Feigelson, who I believe is the artistic director of Kindred Spirits Arts. We'll be talking to him a little bit about what he's going to include on that program.
Carlos, do we have you back?
I'm back.
Okay, good. Live radio,
great.
Everybody. Thank
yeah.
you.
So, Carlos, you were telling us that you were born in Colombia, and you were going to tell us how you got started with music.
Yes. So in Colombia, we in school, in public schools, we have breaks where the student can pretty much do whatever they want, and it's like an hour-long break. And in these breaks, I remember seeing – in that time in Colombia, my English teacher playing guitar with some students. And I used to just be interested. And then one day I joined them and I honestly had such a great experience listening to them that I immediately knew I wanted to do that. So for my birthday, I asked my mom for a guitar and my mom got me a guitar. And the next week I started joining them, trying to play by ear. And since then, my love for the guitar has kept going up and up. So that's how I got started in the guitar.
That's great. And so you started your interest just by hearing it. I'm wondering, were you exposed to some of the great classical guitarists of the past as you were growing up?
So actually, the music that they were playing is what in Colombia we consider popular music.
Uh-huh.
This is more like trios of guitar, like three guitarists who get together and they sing at the same time. So I don't know if any of the audience happens to know this, but there is like Trio Los Panchos, which is a very famous trio that sings like boleros and all this traditional music. So my experience with classical music didn't start until I moved to the United States when I was 15 years old. And I actually wanted to you know, study music. And most people told me, oh, you know, like you can get started with cello or with violin or with piano. And actually, I didn't know that classical guitar was a thing until my high school teacher at the time, Mr. Scalfaro, told me, yeah, you can actually study classical guitar. I'm going to put you in contact with a teacher. And if it wasn't because of him, I wouldn't have known that there is actually a classical guitar degree in the university and so on. So I wasn't exposed to classical music until my junior year of high school in Egg Harbor Township High School in New Jersey.
Well, I mean, you've come so far. You know, so often when I ask that question, people say, oh, you know, my mother was a musician, and they started me studying classical piano or violin or whatever when I was five. And you know, some of those people have said, you know, well, why did you stick with that? And it was like, because my mother made me do it. But for you, it seems like you had the love of the instrument and then discovered that there was this classical outlet for it. And then, you know, you got your bachelor's with a master's in classical guitar and, a major, and then went on to get your master's, and now you're working on your doctorate. So, you know, you really have stuck with it on your own, which is really great.
Yes, yeah, I think I'm out of the norm because I'm studying with, like you said, with people who started when they were 4, 5, 6 years old. And I honestly didn't start studying classical guitar until a couple of months before I applied for undergraduate degree.
Well, I have to say that you have such a beautiful tone when you play. You know, I've been listening to some of your recordings, and it's this pure tone that's just lovely. So it really didn't hurt that you didn't start until later.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yes. I think that's one of the most attractive things that I find for the classical guitar, is that you can get such a wide palette of colors. And I think it makes it very unique, because we as classical guitarists, we have a very direct relationship with the instrument. For example, when I think of a piano, there is a lot of layers of separation between the fingers and the sound. Mm-hmm. But you're pressing the keys, and then the keys activate a hammer that hits on the strings. If you think of a violin, you're holding a bow, and then between the bow and the string, there is also a layer of hair. But with the classical guitar, you're actually touching physically the strings, and you are producing that sound. And I like to think of it like my previous teacher from my master's degree, Dr. Andrew Zone, used to say, I like to think of the guitar as my throat when I speak. So that's one of the most attractive things that I find about the guitar, and it's very, very personal.
Well, and that singing tone that you have makes me also think of the fact that you're also getting a minor in choral conducting, and that you also sing. So you really have two voices. You have your singing voice, and you have your guitar voice.
Yes.
So
choir has always been, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, choir has always been my second passion after guitar. I grew up singing and in church. I grew up Catholic. And I used to work also in several Catholic churches singing and conducting choirs. And honestly, some of my best musical experiences have happened in a choir setting. So I'm very happy to be able to pursue this on the side of the guitar.
Well, that's great that you don't have to totally specialize in a field that is so specialized. Could you tell us about the program that you're going to be playing at Kindred Spirits? Looks very diverse. You've got some Bach, but you've also got, I'm not sure if it's Sergio Assad or Clarice Assad.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that program and what our audience can expect when they come to hear you.
Yes. My program for the last couple of months has been a combination between traditional classical music, music that basically taught me how to love music, and more towards the music that makes me want to dance or inspires me at a heritage level. So by traditional classical music, I mean I'm going to be playing Bach, like you mentioned, Silvius Lapovice, and then more traditional classical guitar music like the Spanish music by Joaquin Rodrigo. And then little by little, I'm going to be making a transition into Latin American music, or music that speaks directly to my soul. I mean, classical music also speaks directly to my soul, but I feel like I can feel more identified with the music that I grew up with. So little by little, I make this transition into Latin American music. So you'll hear the music of Sergio Assad, who is a Brazilian composer, and he magically is able to combine classical music, jazz, impressionistic music, and then Latin American music with samba, frevo, and this piece is called divertimento, which means literally to have fun. And then most of the second half is going to include Latin American music with music by composers like Leo Brouwer from Cuba, and then some samba by Brazilian composer Garoto. And then at the end, I'm also going to be playing, of course, with Maestro Joseph Pegason, who graciously invited me to do this program. We're going to be playing some Granados for cello and guitar.
Well, that sounds like a really well-rounded program that's going to give the audience a really broad overview of what the classical guitar can do in its great variety and many voices. So that sounds wonderful.
That's also another thing that I find very attractive with the guitar. Of course, I'm very attracted to the guitar, but the repertoire can be so varied, and it just fulfills most of my desires. Like, today I feel like I want to play Bach. I can play Bach. Today I feel like I want to play some cumbia, and then I can play some cumbia, like Colombian cumbia. So it's very varied, and it really fulfills my musical needs like that.
You also like to improvise, right? Which,
yes.
I've said this before on this program, but, you know, so many people think improvisation is something that only goes with jazz, but definitely doesn't. And, I think classical musicians are improvising more and more and rediscovering something that was a part of the tradition of classical music many years ago. Do you get the opportunity to improvise very much with other musicians or on your own?
Yes, this is very interesting. I honestly, when I improvise with other musicians, is mostly like behind closed doors, because I have to admit, when it comes to improvising within a setting, I am not as strong as I wish I could be. Like, for example, like jazz or blues. But when it comes to improvising by myself, I like to approach it from a perspective of being completely free and kind of like me being this vessel in which kind of like music comes to me, and I try to let it come to me, and I try to play what I hear in the moment. So when I do improvise, it is very outside of a context, meaning that it's not jazz and it's not blues. And it's also most of the time, I guess, not classical either. It's just I try to embody what I'm feeling in the moment, and I try to come up with sounds that kind of like let me express what I'm feeling in the moment. So a lot of times my improvisations can be quite minimalistic, or they can be like pretty contemporary sounding. And sometimes I just feel like playing something very traditional, like a regular chord progression with a melody on top. So those I won't know until the moment, and I love doing that, because it's a way for me to express how I'm feeling in the moment.
Well, you know, I hope sometimes you turn on the record function on your phone when you're doing that, because it sounds like all that you're channeling into that, you could probably turn into some of your composing work. And
then
bring it beyond you know the solitary occupation to share it with the rest of us.
That's true. Yes, that's a good idea.
So, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about what you have coming up? Any other concerts, or have a little more time?
Sure. Yes, so, well, let me tell you two things. So first of all, I would like to invite whoever's listening to try to play music. If you have had that thought in the back of your head, like, oh, maybe I want to take lessons, piano, voice, guitar, violin lessons. I want to consider this your sign that you should do it. No matter how old, how young, how talented, how much time you have, I think playing music is definitely one of those ways that allows you to fulfill a part of your soul that you don't know that you need it until you're able to do it. And it's so fulfilling. And then the second thing about upcoming engagements, next week I'm going to be playing in Indiana, in Nashville, Indiana. Not Nashville, the city, but Nashville, Indiana, in this amazing chamber music fest. So that's going to be Wednesday. If you happen to be around there in Nashville, Indiana, there's a week-long festival. And then I'm going to have upcoming engagements later in November in Connecticut, in Ohio, in Cincinnati, and Indianapolis. So those are some of my upcoming engagements. And then in L.A. in February and so on, but it's kind of far away.
Well, it sounds like you've got a busy year ahead of you. And but for now, this Saturday, August 17th at 5:30 at the Gray Towers National Historic Site in Milford, and people can go to kindredspiritsarts.org for more information and for tickets. And it sounds like it's going to be a lovely evening in that open air canopy of their pool pavilion, and, you know, a great way to spend a Saturday evening. Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and also thank you to the Kindred Spirits Arts Program and to Maestro Joseph Fagelson for the invitation. I'm very excited to be playing and to share music with him and with the audience. And, of course, thank you for talking to me, for taking the time to talk to me, and I hope that you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
And that is Classical Kids speaking to Carlos Bedoya, who's going to be performing at Kindred Spirits Arts on Saturday. I'm playing a little bit of Carlos's a piece called Sincerity, because he's so sincere. You can hear it with him. And there's more about Carlos and his work at carlosbedoyaguitar.com. Kit, thank you so much for being here this morning with this great conversation with Carlos Bedoya.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
We're going to wrap up here. And before we go, I want to tell you about another event that's coming up today, actually. The Community Advisory Board, Radio Catskills Community Advisory Board, is hosting Horizon Happy Hour tonight at 5 at the Market Sheds at Bethelwood Center for the Arts. Share your feedback about the station and hear music from Juma Sultan's Aboriginal Music Society and Laszlo Lang, son of Woodstock co-creator Michael Lang. The Radio Catskill Community Advisory Board provides input on how well the station is meeting the needs of the community. So tell us how we're doing and enjoy some free jams. It's free admission. More information on our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill and StoryCorps invite you to have a conversation with One Small Step, bringing people with different political beliefs together to simply talk about their lives. Apply today at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Today's weather, partial sunshine with a thundershower in spots, and might have some hazy skies due to some high-altitude smoke from distant fires up north. I-78. It's 11 o'clock.